Hey everyone. Can I think I left my water over there. Can somebody grab that? Thank you everybody who's here to listen to this talk. Honored to be speaking at DevCon. I never really imagined I would be doing that a couple years ago when I first got into Ethereum. So honored to be here and happy to educate or communicate what we've been working on here with the Protocol Guild. So the title of the talk is Funding Ethereum with the Protocol Guild. Like Kartik mentioned, my name is Trent Van Epps. I am a member of this guild. However, I do also work for the EF on the protocol support team, which is we work on network upgrades and generally coordinating the ecosystem around where the protocol is going and how we can improve this coordination process. So, brief intro. I'm assuming most of you are aware of this, but never hurts to step back and think about what this topic is. So, Ethereum generally is a globally distributed computer that anyone can use, anyone can access. People can deploy contracts to it, they can send transactions and interact with it anywhere around the world. This means that Ethereum, the network, so mainnet is a screenshot from Etherscan there. This is a public good that users of the network can depend on and use throughout their lives. They can trust that it's going to be a resource for them. Nobody can stop them from using it. This is stretching the definition of public good a little bit because we have transaction fees, but generally we can understand it to be this. And if we take a step back, looking at the yellow paper, this is the Ethereum virtual machine. This is another public good that Ethereum developers, core contributors, they maintain, and many other chains besides Ethereum also use the EVM. So these are two fundamental public goods infrastructure that people depend on, they build companies on, they store their finances on, and they're really important for people to actually have access to. And if we're thinking about the different categories, these can include, you know, the research about where the protocol is going, the client developers who are implementing the protocol as it currently is, the coordination, like I mentioned, the work that I do along with many others to shape network coordination, and then there's tooling, so what developers actually use to interact with the chain. And then that brings us to the question of how are these areas of public goods funded? A big one is the Ethereum Foundation. You are probably aware of what the Ethereum Foundation is and what it does. It funds a huge number of initiatives in the space, sometimes through direct contributions, sometimes delegating funding to specific ecosystem groups, or things like the client incentive program where it gives ETH directly to client teams to run validators and it unlocks over a specific period of time. And then outside of the Ethereum Foundation, there's groups like Optimism, Giveth, Gitcoin, CLR Fund who run matching rounds, quadratic matching rounds, where the community can participate in actually funding these important public goods, things that people depend on. And then another smaller project, which you may not be aware of, is called Open Grants, which does vested ETH to specific groups. There's some projects that are using this to fund public goods. So yeah, there's quite a diversity, and I think this is one of the strengths of Ethereum is that it has a diversity of approaches. Kevin Owocki, formerly the founder of Gitcoin, had a talk earlier that I was on about practical pluralism and how important it is that we have these many overlapping approaches to how to fund these important initiatives, how to get funding to people who are working on infrastructure. And this is a great visualization of, I'm sure I'm leaving out some projects, so I apologize, but there are these projects on the slide and many more who do the important work of getting money to public goods, infrastructure, the developers who are actually building the things that we depend on. And I'll echo that by saying many community funding mechanisms are good. It decentralizes power and influence away from single entities. It celebrates pluralism, like I mentioned, prevents influence from being siloed with individual allocators, and it strengthens the intra-community relationships. However, especially the quadratic funding mechanisms, they often use similar curation techniques. For example, it weights the matching pool division according to how many people donate to a specific grant. And this is not to say this is a bad thing, it just, it can have a challenge when it comes to delegating funding or getting funding to areas of the protocol that may not be a fit for quadratic funding. So this is the question is, how can we curate better, specifically related to the core protocol, and then even more broadly, how can we incentivize long-term core protocol contributions? So this is a big question that's, you know, been around as long as open source software has been worked on, and it's not a new problem for Ethereum. People have talked about it over the years. You know, people join core development, they leave core development. It's something that will be with us as long as we're producing software and modifying the protocol. So these are the big questions that came to mind. Over the years, they've been a recurring set of concerns, and especially last year, in November, the discussion in the community began again about how can we properly incentivize contributors to stick around while also making sure that they're financially compensated. So when this discussion came up last year, there were my perspective of being around core development for a few years now and then working with core developers directly, some researchers, we started to think about what sort of challenges were most important to address when thinking about what sort of mechanism would be best to design. And I'll go through the first three here, just an overview, and then the next slides detail out what these challenges are. So the first challenge, curation is hard. The second, the incentives are imbalanced. And the third, contributor churn is bad. So the first challenge about curation, the ecosystem is very interested in sponsoring. This guy, the princess and the magician, the ecosystem broader, individuals, DAOs, protocols, L2s, they're interested in funding the core protocol, but they don't have a single mechanism to send funds to. There's sometimes projects will publicize their, you know, Ethereum address that you can send donations to, but it's not necessarily easy to find all of them in a single location. Similarly, protocol contributors are interested in receiving funding. Some of them may not be directly working for a team, but they're doing important infrastructure work. They're interested in receiving some form of financial compensation for the work that they're doing, but there's no single mechanism for them to plug into and be recognized for their work. And then on top of that, some of the existing solutions favor teams due to the difficulty of curation, like I mentioned. The solutions favor teams, and it's really hard for them to surface many individual contributors, for example, in a grants round. And we can't expect a single organization to that's outside of this core development or this core infrastructure to effectively curate the work that these people are doing. You know, it's very deep technically. It requires you to sort of be embedded within that work. And it's not reasonable to expect a single organization like Gitcoin to really effectively curate who's doing the work at the core protocol and how they should receive the funding. So the response to how to address this question is we should designate a contract on-chain that is regularly updated by the members themselves. So people who are doing core contributor work, they're updating this membership registry. The second problem is that the incentives are imbalanced. So this is maybe a little self-explanatory, but I'll go into it. L2s, DeFi projects, token projects, things that have equity, there's a stronger incentive for people to go work on them rather than the core protocol. And this is completely rational, you know, if you're weighing your options here. Ethereum just doesn't have token incentives or equity or anything that can similarly be offered by applications or L2s. However, it still needs to attract and retain talent to evolve the protocol. You know, Ethereum is an infrastructure in flux. There's a lot of changes that we'd like to make to better scale, to become more secure, and we need really smart people working on these problems. But we should be compensating them fairly. It's totally rational to pursue something with you know, greater financial upside, and I don't fault people for that or for other protocols leveraging these incentives. However, as the broader ecosystem continues to grow, competition for these talented individuals is really going to only increase. Of course, financial motivations aren't the only or best motivator for people. We just want to recognize that it's just one tool in our tool set that's being under leveraged. So the problem of imbalance. We can address this by tapping into the financial value that all of these amazing projects are building on top of Ethereum and getting them to contribute some of them back to the people who are working on the core protocol. The third challenge, excuse my rushed graphics here, but the contributor churn is a challenge when it comes to the core protocol. It can take, you know, 6 to 12 months for somebody joining a client team to really start to understand how they can contribute to the client effectively and start making a meaningful impact on the work. So there's a steep learning curve for new contributors to deliver value. However, the contributor value does grow over time if you stick around, but there's less incentive to stick around if you're once you're an expert, you sort of reach a certain level of expertise with a client code base, for example. So one of the things we thought about how to address this contributor churn is that membership eligibility to any sort of public goods funding mechanism, it should only be after 6 months of regular contributions, and that assets should vest over time in order to incentivize this this knowledge transfer between different cohorts, different generations of people working on the core protocol. You know, there are some amazing people doing work today that maintain clients and make Ethereum infrastructure and the protocol possible, but eventually they're going to move on or retire if we're still around in so many years. And we need to make sure that the next generation of people that are going to be maintaining this software are ready and incentivized to stick around similarly. So, as you may have guessed, I'm describing the Protocol Guild, which started as an idea last November, and we've been building it since then. We worked with a team called 0x Splits to design, well, they already had a split contract, but we worked with them to design a vesting contract. And it's a collective of today, 119 Ethereum contributors, and we're working to rebalance the incentive, address all those challenges like I laid out in those previous slides. And here's a very simple diagram. The sponsors, these can be anybody in the ecosystem, individuals, projects, large scale, small, doesn't matter. Anybody who's interested in giving back to a really highly curated set of core protocol contributors, they send funds in whatever form they are to a vesting contract over a certain amount of time. And then it goes to this weighted registry, which is regularly updated by the membership itself. And that's the key, that it's self-curated, because you know you have a really high signal for the membership and the fact that you know that these are people who are doing really crucial work. I'll dive in a little bit into eligibility and self-curation. Like I mentioned, to be part of the Protocol Guild, it has to be, you know, something beyond a typo in a client code base or something. And beyond 6 months, we want to make sure there's a high threshold for people who are actually really committed to this infrastructure work. Touching on self-curation again, The reason this is super important is because it avoids intermediation between external curating entities, which may or may not be really close to the work that people are doing. So, like I said, you get a really high signal curation, and you can be assured that this is going to be consistently updated over time with membership that's really contributing to the core protocol. And it's incentive compatible because adding new members dilutes existing ones, so you don't have to worry about new members, just adding anybody in the ecosystem. There's a cost to properly curating. However, if eligible contributors are not being added, then it removes any legitimacy that's built up over time, and external funders won't continue funding this mechanism. So we hope that these are sufficiently balanced against each other, but this next year is sort of a learning period It's a learning period, so we've launched a one-year pilot to test out the assumptions about the challenges that we wanted to address, as well as the assumptions about what the best ways to approach them are, how long should vesting be, things like this. So we're working on that. We launched the protocol itself in May of this year, and it'll run until May of next year. And so far, we've raised $11 million in sponsoring assets, and like I said, these will vest for 1 year over time, again, to incentivize long-term contributions, knowledge transfer between different cohorts of core contributors. And it's been very awesome to plug into existing funding infrastructure to touch on this idea of pluralism in funding. There's a Gitcoin grant. We've tapped into some DAO treasuries who fund back in their native token. So shout out to the people that have funded, including Uniswap, Lido, ENS, NounsDAO, to name a few, as well as this norm that we want to pursue of One way to scale the incentive, to build the norm around allocating a percent of the initial supply or annual revenue. So again, another shout out to True Freeze, Gnosis Safe, and Texture Punks and NFT Project. They've committed to contributing some of their revenue. And over time, we want to build this more and more. We're not saying that this is the only or best way to fund through initial token allocation, but we're very excited to explore this with the broader ecosystem. We're already starting some discussions with L2s about how they can directly fund this incentive mechanism. And one thing we really want to be intentional about is documenting the outcomes to see, does this really work? Does this increase the incentive to contribute to the core protocol? And we hope it will, but we want to make sure that the community hold us accountable and we really iterate and improve the mechanism over time. One of the cool things is, because this is all on chain, anybody can track it. So if you go to Dune Analytics and search Protocol Guild or something monkey, sorry, I can't remember the name of the contributor, but we've been working with someone to put together this dashboard, and anybody can track the finances of this on-chain protocol incentivization mechanism, which is pretty amazing. You can see the membership, the total weighting of their share of the proceeds, who has contributed, really great data source, and awesome for transparency if anybody's interested in tracking that. So I'm ending a little early. If there are any questions, I'd love to talk with anybody who wants to learn more about the mechanism. If you're part of a DeFi project or something that's planning to launch a token, please do come to talk to me or any of the members. There's a ton of core developers here who are part of this project. That QR code, I think, takes you to the docs or somewhere else relevant. And then there's some bit.ly links if anybody's curious to explore more. That's my handle, and then you can follow the organization itself at Protocol Guild on Twitter. So thank you for the time. Again, to the DEF CON organizers for giving me space to talk about this. Public goods funding is incredibly important, and it's important to have also a variety of approaches, different curators, different mechanisms, so that we can make sure that the incentives to contributing back to the Ethereum protocol in the context of amazing application layer projects is maintained over time. So thank you, and I'm happy to take questions if there are any.
We have a question here. We'll give the mic to the gentleman over there. If you have more questions, please just raise your hand or get to the end of the line so we can quickly give you the mic. And let's begin with a question.
Hey, Trent. Thanks. Amazing initiative. Thank you for giving the speech. I had a question about the recent acquisition of Prism. I'm curious if you could comment on that. Like, obviously, on one hand, that means that there's, I guess, less pressure on the Protocol Guild to fund those developers. On the other hand, is that the kind of outcome that we strive for? Now, obviously, Arbitrum, they're a good actor. I think they have a great reputation. But one could think of some potential downsides. So I'm just wondering, how does the Protocol Guild feel about those kind of outcomes?
What sort of downsides do you see?
Undue influence. I mean, obviously, we have like 9 teams in total who are contributing to this, if I'm not mistaken. We trust Arbitrum. If they start doing some weird stuff, there's other options for people to choose different clients. And obviously, if we have many more clients, their influence, they won't really have an influence. But nevertheless, they have certain interests. They're probably going to launch a token, tokenomics, how do they pump their token? These kind of questions.
Yeah, you definitely picked the hardest question, given they announced yesterday. So yeah, this is really interesting and touches a lot of different areas about protocol governance, incentivization, funding the core protocol work. And like you said, I know them all personally, so I do have a bias here, but I do expect that they will maintain their neutrality. I can't comment super deeply on it, again, because it just happened and I'm still digesting, still understanding the mechanics of it, but I don't expect that there would be any undue influence exerted by the L2. And like you said, if there were red flags starting to appear, I'm pretty sure the community would call it out pretty fast. Either Arbitrum or the Prismatic team would adjust course pretty quickly. But yeah, that's the short answer.
I saw another hand. Do we have more questions?
Let's say someone's leaving the Protocol Guild. What's like the process for the offboarding? Like, do they have an amount of time, or
Has that been thought through much?
Leaving or joining?
Leaving.
If they're leaving, so they can claim any assets from vesting at any point, but there are windows in the contract. So once they leave contributing core protocol work, they won't receive future vesting, but they can claim at any time. It's permissionless like that. Does that answer yes? Anybody else?
I have one.
Sure.
How do you think about deciding what should be funded, and how do you sort of, in a way, prevent or get ahead of not having favoritism kind of come into play?
Yeah. This is something that we've been trying to iterate on through the pilot, and one of the reasons we wanted to start really small. I mean, 10 million is it may seem like a large number, but split between 120 different core contributors, it's not that massive. But we were very intentional about the amount of money that we're raising, and that's one of the main reasons, is because the eligibility framework isn't going to be exactly right the first time, and we're going to need to iterate on it. And so that's part of this pilot, is figuring out what sort of scope we want to take on. And I think what we've learned over the past 6 months since May is that it's probably better for a more narrow scope and to be as explicit as possible. So if you're working on a research team, if you're contributing to a client code base or doing coordination, we want to make sure that it's very clear that these are people who are contributing value, because if you aren't explicit or don't maintain rigor in the eligibility process, again, the mechanism will lose its value. It'll become a lossy signal for people who are interested in contributing to something that's going to get their money to go to the right place. So make sure that we're iterating and starting small is how we've approached it.
That's great. And just out of curiosity, did you kind of compare this thing with the retroactive funding model, and, mm-hmm. and sort of what was kind of the pros and cons list that you made you kind of pick this model?
Sure. So retroactive funding is great in that we can also plug into that. However, these individual teams, they don't have to apply on their own. Or the because Protocol Guild is biased towards the individual, you can imagine it's sort of like a collective or a union that represents them. And makes it very, very straightforward for people interested in funding, like Optimism's retroactive funding program. They can just point it to a single address and scale it accordingly, however much they'd like to give back, rather than possibly missing somebody who did crucial work over the past 2 years. They can rest assured that this is a mechanism that's going to be very, very tightly curated. But yeah, I'm super excited to plug into retroactive funding, continue to have a Gitcoin grant, things like that is all possible. And I'm sure there will be even more mechanisms in the future that are a good fit for these types of things.
Awesome. Do you have any other last questions? Great. Well, please give Trent a big round of applause.
Thank you.